I welcome you back to yet another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are in the book of Daniel, chapter number 9, just got started on it last session. This is taking place in the first official year of Darius the Mede, which would make it 538 BC. It is the 68th year of Daniel's captivity. And it's the 50th year of Jerusalem's desolation. And Daniel has a time of confession that he involves himself in. It's prompted by his Bible study. He's reading through the prophet Jeremiah, and he sees there the prophecy, not once, but twice, that the desolation in connection with the coming of the Babylonians would last 70 years. So here's Daniel, somewhere in his 70s. He might actually be he's in his 80s. He might be somewhere very close to his 90th birthday. And he knows that only two more years are left since he was in exile at the beginning of the Babylonian control of Judea. So it seems as if the prophecy of Jeremiah is close at hand in its fulfillment. And so he begins to pray and confess the sins of Israel, the sins which brought this desolation, brought this exile, but also a little bit of what's still left in place, that those who are in exile have still not fully repented of the sins that took the Israelites into exile the generation before. And so he is asking God to exert mercy and to continue with his promise in spite of some of these sins of the Jewish people. And this results in an angelic visitation. And that's what we were just getting ready for when we had to close up last week. So Daniel chapter number 9, verse number 20. While I was speaking and praying, confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel. So he talks a little bit about his own personal sins. That I don't think is terribly specific in what we've got in front of us. He's more involved in confessing the sin of the nation. And then it says, and presenting my plea before he who is my God for the holy hill of my God. So his begging of God, please keep your promise, please have mercy in spite of sin, and end the desolation of the Temple Mount, end the desolation of Jerusalem, the holy hill of my God. Verse 21, while I was speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel. Now, the word man here it's not taking consideration something we already know from elsewhere, and that is Gabriel is not just in the form of a man, he's actually an angelic being who is in the form of a man. So the man Gabriel, the angel, whom I had seen in the vision at the first, came to me in swift flight at the time of the evening sacrifice. Now, we don't know when Daniel began his prayer session on this day. It's possible this might have been the morning prayer of Daniel. You know he's in the habit of praying mid-morning, midday, mid-afternoon. It could be that he started this prayer session middle of the morning. Maybe he started in the middle of the day, but we know that the answer comes in the middle of the afternoon. The time of the evening sacrifice was when the sun was halfway down from noon towards sunset. And the sacrifices are not happening in Jerusalem right now because the temple is desolate. But Daniel is still using that long-standing traditional time of prayer for his own prayer time. And that's when Gabriel shows up. Verse 22, he made me understand, speaking with me and saying, "Oh, Daniel, I have now come to give you insight and understanding. At the beginning of your pleas for mercy, a word went out, and I have come to tell it to you, for you are greatly loved." So Daniel and the Israeli people are loved by God because of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the 12 tribes, all of this, of this work that God has put over the centuries into bringing his promises to fulfillment through these people is driven by his love. And so God, through the angel Gabriel, says, "I want you to know that I love you, I hear you, and I still am on track with the plan. There is still the covenant promise to be kept." And so here is more detail of what Daniel is given at this time. Now, it's got to be a little bit frustrating for him because he's asking God about the end of one time of God's judgment. And we're going to discover that God tells him about another time of judgment that's going to be coming. Now, thankfully, between those two judgments is the coming of God's salvation. And we will focus very much on that in our study. So Gabriel finishes by saying, "Therefore, consider the word and understand the vision." Now, the last few verses of this chapter are pretty famous, and they always come up in prophecy studies, and people have gone into great detail in the wording of these few verses here. But I'm going to ask you, if you've done studies in all those other places, to kind of lay aside what you've heard in the past and give me the opportunity to suggest to you some better understandings of this passage that will help alleviate some of the more confusing aspects of prophecy teaching in the more traditional vein of the premillennial teaching points. So if you'll give me that opportunity, I want you to be able to chew on what I'm going to teach you in comparison to what you've already heard in the past. But that means you have to kind of give me the benefit of the doubt, okay? So number one thing, I'm going to read to you the English Standard Version translation of this passage, which is similar to every other English translation. And then I'm going to take you to my own translation and explain why mine is slightly different. Okay? Verse 24. 70 weeks. Now the word here, weeks, is the English representation of another word for sevens. So it's 70 sevens are going to be decreed. And the word weeks, though, can be confusing because it's not 70 seven-day periods. It's actually going to be 70 seven-year periods. And I'll come back on that in detail with my own translation. But let's go back to the English Standard. 70 weeks are decreed about your people, that'd be the Israeli people, your holy city, Jerusalem, to finish the transgression, that would be their sin, to put an end to sin, and to atone for iniquity. That's important. Where there is sin, there needs to be atonement so that it can be forgiven. To bring in everlasting righteousness, because righteousness is what we're supposed to be living our lives as. We are to be holy as God is holy. So that's the goal. To seal, that is, put God's stamp of approval, to seal both vision and prophet, and to anoint a most holy place. Now, I want you to take note that place is not in the original text. And even though it's not true in the English Standard Version's way of doing things, I know the New American Standard Version and other English Bibles have italicized the word place here because they are assuming that is what is intended. And I think they've assumed incorrectly. And because they've put it into their translation, they've kind of skewed the understanding of it a bit. Now, I do note that my copy of the English Standard Version at this point has a footnote which says that instead of place, it could be the word thing or the word one. And I believe one would be the more correct one. And I'll get back to the more detail of that in a bit. Verse 25. Know therefore. So that's an imperative. You've got to understand this, Daniel. And understand that from the going out of the word to restore and build Jerusalem to the coming of an anointed one, a prince, there shall be 7 weeks. Then, for 62 weeks, it shall be built again with squares and moat, but in a troubled time. And after the 62 weeks, an anointed one shall be cut off and shall have nothing. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. So right there, Daniel is being told the city is going to be destroyed again after it's rebuilt. And the sanctuary, the temple, is going to be destroyed again after it's been rebuilt. So Daniel's looking forward to the end of the desolation for the past 70 years and the rebuilding of the city and the rebuilding of the temple. Unfortunately, he's being told right now that won't last. That city, that sanctuary are also going to be desolated. Continuing. Its war shall come with a flood, and to the end there shall be war. Desolations are decreed. And he, and we'll have to talk about where this he goes back to, because prepositions need to be tied in with the proper noun that they're associated with. He shall make a strong covenant with many for 1 week, and for half of the week, he shall put an end to sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of abominations shall come one who makes desolate until the decreed end is poured out on the desolator. So that's a very typical English translation of this passage. Let me share with you now my own translation of the same verses. And I'll give you my reasons for the small but large impact differences that I have in my translation as we go along. And if you're interested in seeing this in writing, I'll try to make sure there's a hot link on the website that has my translation and the notes for why I go certain routes in my translation. If you don't have internet, give me a phone call, 574-850-1327, and I'll make sure that you get a copy mailed to you. Daniel 9:24. 70 sevens, and the sevens here are not 1 week of 7 days. It's 1 week of 7 years. because we know the Jewish people worked 6 days with one Sabbath day off. And they also worked 6 years with one sabbatical year off as the seventh year. And so I believe that Daniel is being told that there are 70 sabbatical cycles set aside until the arrival of the Messiah. And that means the end of sin and the provision of atonement that's supposed to be happening within the Jewish society. Because let's continue reading the verse. 70 sevens have been allocated for your people, that's the Israelis, your holy city, that's Jerusalem, to terminate the rebellion. So they need to knock it off with the rebellion. To stop sin, that's the rebellion. To atone for iniquity, to bring in perpetual righteousness, because that's the importance here. They're supposed to quit sinning and start living holy. To put a seal on vision and prophecy, which all prophecy, all vision is pointing forward in time to God resolving the sin problem. And the key point in history is going to be the atonement of Jesus Christ. So that's what all this is pointing to. And then the last part of the verse is, and to anoint the Most Holy One. And I do go with this meaning a person rather than a place or a thing because of the next verse. It is all about the coming of the Messiah. He's the anointed one. In fact, let's just go to the next verse. Verse 25. You shall know and understand from the issuance of an order for Jerusalem to be restored and built until the anointed leader. There will be 7 sevens and 62 sevens. It will be restored and built, both streets and wall, and the times will be poured out. So this clock, this countdown, is until the coming of Mashiach. That's the word that is right here in verse number 25. Mashiach is the Hebrew way of saying the anointed one, like a prophet or a priest or a king, someone that's had the anointing oil poured on their head in a special ceremony. So this is where we get our modern day word Messiah. Mashiach becomes Messiah. In Greek, when you poured the holy anointing on someone, you referred to them as being Christos. They've been christened. And the English word that's come out of that we're so used to is Christ or Christ. So Jesus is the Christ. Or, as the Hebrew would say, Yeshua is HaMashiach. Jesus is the anointed one. So these two verses at the beginning of this passage are all about a time limit that is placed on the Jewish people and the city of Jerusalem to get ready for the coming of the Messiah. That full time limit is 490 years, 7 times 70. But it's broken down in verse 25 into two smaller pieces. First, there's going to be a 7, so 49 years. And during that time, Jerusalem is going to be completely rebuilt and rewalled and repopulated. And it is trying to identify when the decree to start this process happens so that we will know where to start this clock. The most common date given in prophetic writings is 444. Some people would say 445 BC, because that's the year that Nehemiah was given a decree to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Now, they run into a problem, though, by starting the count at that point. Because in normal years, you know, one time around the sun, by the time Jesus shows up, there's still more time left on this clock. And because of that, some past prophecy teachers, in particular, I'm thinking about Sir Robert Anderson, and before him, actually, Sir Isaac Newton, they massaged the numbers here. They went ahead and started the clock at 4:45 or 4:44, but they decided that they needed to only count 360 days in a year. Now, there are no 360-day years in Scripture outside of the potential, which I think is very real, of before the flood. I think before the flood, we did have a 360-day year, 12 months, 30 days each. But I also believe that the lunar cycle was exactly 30 days long, and the solar cycle was exactly 360 days long. We haven't had that since the flood. Isaac Newton and Robert Anderson said, well, we have examples of ancient societies that use the 360-day year. Yes, but the ones that used it without adjustment had their calendars totally whacked out. And the Jewish society never had a calendar like that. And any of the societies that did practice a usual 360-day year had some way of adjusting it by throwing five days in at the end of each year as a special holiday situation, because that way it kept it in sync. Or they might every few years throw in an extra month. That's actually what the Jewish people did in order to keep their calendar in sync with the seasons. So there was never in Jewish society ever a 360-day year or a prophetic year described, which these guys try to use. And they only, by doing this, threw another problem in, because they ended up with one extra seven-year period that they couldn't account for before the Messiah comes. And so what they do is they throw that into the future. They throw it into the book of Revelation time and say that's the final 7 years related to the second coming of Jesus. Well, I got two problems with that. Let me give you the second one first. In the book of Revelation, number seven is a really big number. You have seven angels and seven stars and seven churches and seven this and seven that and seven bowls and seven trumpets. You've got sevens all over the place. But you know one thing that you don't have seven of? 7 years. You have a 3.5 year period that is variously described as time times and half a time, or 42 months, or 1,260 days of the prophet's work, which is just 10 days shy of 1,270 days in a 3.5 year Jewish cycle. But you never have any 7 years. So that's one of my problems with it. The other one is this. None of this monkeying around with the numbers is necessary if you just start the clock somewhere other than 444 BC. Now, where, you might ask, do we start it? Well, the answer is we start it with Ezra, several years before Nehemiah. Ezra was the prophet, priest, scribe that came back to Jerusalem with the book of the law. And he came back in the summer of 457 BC. He had a decree that had been given to him by the king that he was to reestablish the proper Jewish faith there in the rebuilt city of Jerusalem with the temple that had been reestablished. And he was to use whatever funds he wanted out of the royal funds in order to accomplish all these things. And he basically had carte blanche. He could do anything he wanted to. And this is what we know. He started rebuilding the walls. He actually mentions the rebuilding of the walls in his prayer time, his praise and prayer time, once he's arrived back in the country. And then, unfortunately, the non-Jewish neighbors of Judea objected to the rebuilding the walls, lodged an official complaint at this time, and the king decreed that the rebuilding the walls needed to stop until he gave official permission to rebuild them, which he would do just a matter of years later with Nehemiah. So how does this impact on our study? That means that the decree to rebuild Jerusalem completely with its walls started in 457 BC. Now, you want to know something else special about 457 BC? The fall of that year started another sabbatical cycle. And so we begin the countdown right on the button of a sabbatical cycle. And when we come back tomorrow, I'm going to walk you through how the cycles would have worked so that they would have all finished at the time of the coming of the Holy One, Jesus.